Now, after a decade as Ombudsman for Children, Emily Logan is leaving the position, having been nominated to become the new Chief Commissioner of the newly created Human Rights and Equality Commission. So what's been achieved in those 10 years in the Ombudsman's office and what work remains to be done? Emily Logan is with us now. Good afternoon. Thanks for coming in. We should say, first of all, that you've been nominated to take up this wonderfully titled Chief Commissioner's job with the Human Rights and Equality Commission, but you have to go before an Oireachtas committee before that's agreed.
That's right. The new legislation, which will be established on the 1st of November, enhances the independence of the Human Rights and Equality Commission insofar as all of the commissioners, including myself, will be appointed by President Higgins following a resolution by both houses of the Oireachtas. So I have to, as part of that process, to present myself to the Oireachtas Committee on Justice before I would be formally appointed.
And as you said yourself, if you were doing your job properly as Ombudsman for Children, you will have offended at least some of that Oireachtas committee who probably weren't doing their job properly in the last 10 years.
I think I may have said that to you privately before we went on air.
But it's true, isn't it? I mean, if they all sanction you, we might worry that you should have come up against them in a conflict situation, if you like, over the last 10 years.
Well, I think if you look at the narrative of the, for instance, the fall of government in the last number of decades, there are two occasions when governments have fallen on issues that relate to either children's rights or the place of children in society. And back in 1982, it was Jim Kemmy who voted against, at the time, John Bruton's budget in relation to introduction of VAT on shoes. And the second occasion was 1994, when the government fell following the mishandling of the extradition of Brendan Smith, a notorious paedophile. And at that stage, there was, I suppose, an unremitting coverage, and quite rightly so by the media, of what was an institutional inertia around the abuse of children at the time. So what I would say is, while the office is an apolitical, institutionally it's apolitical, of course many of the issues that affect children's rights and children's place in society are politically charged. So yes, there have been many interactions over the last 10 years in this regard.
The very existence of the Office of Ombudsman for Children, or indeed the Human Rights and Equality Commission, is a tacit acceptance that the state fails, that the Oireachtas fails as a watchdog over what the state bodies do or should do, isn't it?
Well, I think time and time again, what I've seen over the last 10 years is, I suppose, the propensity to look at what might be politically expedient. And in fact, the constitutional amendment was one of those examples. And that was a project that, for me, I took up in 2005 in my first year as Ombudsman for Children, having had people like Catherine McGuinness trailblaze ahead of me. But that project took 5 years in terms of getting political consensus across the Oireachtas. It wasn't until February 2010 that there was actually political consensus achieved around the notion that the position of children in the Constitution should be enhanced. So in terms of the Oireachtas as legislators, yes, you have to persevere, you have to be determined, you have to ensure that children's issues are kept on the political agenda, and to ensure that as legislators, legislation produces robust, good, strong legislation that's in the interests of children. I mean, one of the very strong examples for me was the Civil Partnership Bill back in 2009, where children were deliberately omitted from that bill because people politically did not want to tackle some of the tough issues. So that's the role of the Ombudsman for Children and the Ombudsman for Children's office, is to ensure that children remain on those agendas.
Now, you did say yourself at the time, or shortly afterwards, about the constitutional referendum on children, that it need not or would not necessarily bring about a radical change. Have you seen change as a result of this, or what real change has been made or still requires to be made through the introduction of supporting legislation?
Well, sadly, at the moment, there's still an appeal ongoing to the Supreme Court in relation to the outcome of the referendum, the Jordan case. There has been a judgment by Judge McDermott, but we're still awaiting the outcome. But what I would say is, I am seeing already, certainly in terms of judicial administration, I've been approached by judges to look at the training or the improvement of systems for hearing children's voices in the context of administrative justice. So people are beginning to prepare for the principles that are included now in that constitutional change.
There, as we look down over the many cases that have made the news over the last 10 years, and there's a lot of individual cases there and alarming cases, one common feature throughout these cases is the long delay in dealing with, not the complaint, but what's gone wrong. And obviously, there's difficulty with resources, but that shouldn't exclude or should forgive, if you like, what seems to be a terribly slow response from the various state agencies.
And that was one. That was one of the arguments against the constitutional amendment was the what was perceived as increasing state intervention. In my experience as Ombudsman for Children for the last 10 years, in fact, it's often inaction by the state. I've met many parents, in particular of children with chronic illness, with disabilities, with special needs, who find themselves in situations of state inaction and then a disproportionate response when the family reaches a state of crisis. So I think that it's, for me, it's beyond resources. I mean, some of these issues were happening long before 2008. And some of it is about culture, some of it is about mindset, some of it is about officials not being clear that they should be putting the interests of children ahead of the interests of the institution or a minister or a department.
But once they're alerted to it, either by the complainant, whoever that might be, or indeed by your office, how quickly do they deal with it or resolve it? That's the issue.
Well, I think what's been very good in terms of the results for the Ombudsman for Children's Office, about 90% of the 10,000 cases that we've seen are resolved fairly quickly, within a matter of 6 to 8 weeks. What usually happens in the early days, it was taking a lot of intervention by our office. Now, I suppose we've developed our own credibility. When we send out that first letter to the public body to say this is the complaint, often they'll try and mitigate the action to avoid the office intervening or investigating, carrying out a full inquiry. So that's a result. It's better. I would prefer that public bodies respond quickly and locally to children and families than having a quasi-judicial body having to investigate.
Can you cope with all? I know, reading your most recent annual report, and there's another one due, there was a slight drop in the number of complaints made to your office. But can you cope with all of the complaints that you're getting, or what volume of work did you have to decline on the basis of limited resources?
Yeah, I think sadly, well, in relation to the investigations, it's a discretionary power. So like other ombudsmen, you don't investigate every case that comes across your door. We investigate between about 3 to 5% of all of the cases in terms of a full level of inquiry. But there is what's called a preliminary inquiry that evokes a good response from a public body. But what I would say is that we have never, I suppose, obviously we've never fettered our discretion and not investigated something that has been very, very serious. Into the future, for the next person coming in, I think resources are going to be an issue. What I would have liked to do, one of my regrets as Ombudsman, is I would have liked to have a bigger investigation team where we could accelerate some of the investigations and do more investigations that would achieve a response in a quicker time.
Do they take you seriously? I know you had some difficulties with some of the heads of various state bodies down over the years, and we won't go through all of that. But do you think that they do take the office seriously, or do they still attempt to fob you off?
I think in the beginning they probably tried to fob us off. There were a couple of memorable moments for me. Our work in St. Patrick's Institution in particular stands out for me, where I actually had to seek assistance from the UN Committee Against Torture and the Council of Europe, because domestically I wasn't really getting my voice heard. I was doing my utmost. So they were taking it seriously, all right, but they didn't want to do anything about it. So I think that now that the office is taken seriously, there are a number, we've had huge support over the 10 years, not least from people like This Week and the media, in terms of covering some of the serious issues. But also politically, if you watch, we watch very closely the political debates. Children are the calibre of debates, the quality of those debates and the policy issues that are coming up are much more improved than they would have been 10 years ago.
When we had all of the publicity a number of weeks ago about the children, the young children in Tuam, a number of articles were written saying, well, look, we've learned something. We may not make the same mistakes, but we still make mistakes and we're still guilty of the type of callous disregard that perhaps we're so guilty to condemn from previous generations. An obvious example of that to many people would be the number of children in state care. According to the Child and Family Agency, more than 6,500 children in care. That's a 23% increase on 2007. 90% of those in foster care, but there's such a shortage of foster carers in Dublin, particularly in the north of the city, the children have been moved away from their own communities. And the other startling statistic out of that, 460 children in residential specialist or secure care units. What does it say about us?
Well, in the first instance, that figure compares very favourably internationally with our immediate neighbours. We've less children in care than the other four jurisdictions across Northern Ireland and the UK. We also have a better system of having most of those children in foster care, which is very good. What we need to look at now is, I suppose, what I would describe as emerging issues. So a lot of services have been outsourced to private companies, and this isn't an ideological argument, it's about accountability. And we're currently investigating how the Child and Family Agency is being accountable for that outsourcing of what is very significant. It's 50 million, the cost of residential care services for children. So we're currently investigating that. But it's really important to stay on that pitch and stay with children who are at risk.
Emily Logan, thank you very much indeed for coming in this afternoon.